This is 89.9 WWNL. Yes, we're headed for another art-filled week. Are you making plans or do you need some ideas? Well, you've come to the right place. Whether you're in the mood for an evening of chamber music or conversation with Prospect 4 artist, it's all in the mixed media. Come along as we go inside the arts. Hi, I'm your host, Diane Mack. Musaica Chamber Ensemble continues its 12th season with Music in Transition, performing works by Mozart, Britten, Schoenberg, and others. Joining me are Musaica founder and violist Bruce Owen and cellist Stefan Koch. Welcome to the program.
Thanks so much for having us here.
It's great to be here.
I remember sitting down with you in the early days, Bruce, as you cobbled together this chamber ensemble. 12 years later, what do you think about your vision and the success of Musaica?
I just want to keep doing what we're doing and have more people write music for us and keep playing music that doesn't get done. I'm very interested, of course, in writing some grants to get more financial support for the group. I just want more people to know about us and to keep coming to hear our concerts and to hear music that they would not hear any other place.
And, Stefan, you are in from Michigan for this performance. Welcome back to the city.
Thank you. It's so great to be in New Orleans again.
What are you looking forward to on the program?
Well, I'm performing on several of the works, most notably the Schoenberg, which was actually my idea. I proposed it to the group last time I was here. I've always wanted to play this piece, and to play it with such fine musicians as Bruce has in his group is such a pleasure. I can't even describe how wonderful it is to do that.
This is the string sextet, Transfigured Night?
Correct.
Bruce, tell us a little bit more about this composition.
This is a very early work of Schoenberg. He's actually written in 1899, and it's his Opus 4. A lot of people might think of Schoenberg only in terms of the atonal or 12-tone music that he wrote much of his life. But this was very early work that was actually, it's very late Romanticism. Well, he was inspired by Brahms, for one, and it's based on a poem by Richard de Mel about a woman who is walking with her partner in the woods, and she has a secret to tell him. She's pregnant with another man's child, and she's really worried about what his reaction is going to be. And so the music just so amazingly captures these almost panicked feelings that she has. And then finally she tells him, and amazingly he accepts her, and the child is his own, and that's the transfiguration that happens in this piece.
What are the other works to be performed?
We're playing the first movement of the Mozart Divertimento for string trio. This was a late work of Mozart's. We thought it would be interesting, since we're talking about transition, we're talking about music from Vienna of the late 18th century and what music sounded like at that time, and then ending the program with music from the turn of the century, early 20th century, to reflect what was happening at that time. We're also doing a piece by Marcel Grangiani. He wrote a piece called Aria in the Classic Style for harp and strings. This piece can be done with string orchestra or with organ or with a string quintet, which is how we're presenting it. It premiered in 1951, but it's written in a very classic style. The harp is playing a very vocal part. That's why it's called an aria. It's kind of our bridge between the classical style of Mozart and the more romantic style of Schoenberg. And then the other piece that we are playing is another work that was based on poetry, Benjamin Britten's Six Metamorphoses after Ovid for solo oboe. In this piece, the solo oboe is depicting in each of these movements different descriptions of the gods.
You call the program Works in Transition. In the end, how will the audience be transformed?
I think they're going to feel a change of their attitude about the world. People will see how chaos can be turned into order and things can be made right. If we can do that with a really great piece of music, I can't think of any other better way to do that.
I might add also that I think a lot of people come to concerts with expectations or preconceptions, like, I think I know this about Arnold Schoenberg, or I think I know that about Mozart. And the great thing about hearing the music live is that oftentimes you discover that your preconceptions weren't correct. And, oh, I actually really like this music by Schoenberg, and it relates to other music that I really like. You discover things about the composers. Your beliefs are transformed.
Musaica founder and violist Bruce Owen and cellist Stefan Koch, thanks so much.
Oh, thanks so much for having me, Stan.
It's been wonderful. Thank you.
Musaica Chamber Ensemble performs tonight at St. Charles Avenue Presbyterian Church, 1545 State Street. And tomorrow evening at the University of New Orleans Performing Arts Center. Both concerts are at 7:30 p.m. More info online at Musaica, musaica.org. Odili Donald Odita is a Nigerian-born artist whose work plays a big part in Prospect 4. His colorful flags appear throughout the city to mark places where social change was born, starting in Congo Square.
Well, here we are in Congo Square, next to a flag, and the artist is sitting here with me. Say your name for us.
Odili Donald Odita.
And where are you from?
I'm originally from Nigeria, but I grew up in the States most of my life, in the Midwest, in Columbus, Ohio. Went to Ohio State University for college, undergraduate, and then Bennington College for my master's in painting. After that, I moved to New York City. I was there for 10 years. Yeah, then teaching at Florida State University in Tallahassee for 6 years. Part of that time was working as a visiting critic at Yale University, and a year visiting artist job at University of South Florida in Tampa. And since 2006, I've been at the Tyler School of Art in Philadelphia. Now I'm a full professor at the Tyler School of Art.
How old are you to be so accomplished?
I look a lot younger than I appear. I'll say that.
Fair enough. How many exhibits do you have in the Prospect show, and where are they? And
right.
Tell us. They're flags, mostly.
Yeah, they're flags. They're in 16 different locations throughout the city. William France Elementary, commemorating Ruby Bridges desegregating the school here in New Orleans. Dillard University, Jackson Square, La Musée de FPC, Plessy Memorial, quite a few on Aretha Castle Haley Boulevard, Dookie Chase Restaurant, and the Dewdrop Inn, Eagle Saloon, Sportsman Corner, Algiers Point Ferry, Algiers Point Ferry Terminal, the Welcome Center for Prospect, and again, William France Elementary School. The one at the school is really significant for me, as is this one here in Congo Square. They seem quite modest in a certain sense. They're just flags. You can walk past them as you would any other flag. But my point to do these flags in the city was to make a marker for really important historical situations, people gathering, points of discussion and decision-making, all for the sake of liberation. And consequentially, the flags are, in a way, celebratory markers for these points of struggle.
It's unfurling here in the wind. Describe it for us.
You can see that it has a kind of burst, like a sunburst that comes out of it. One side is dark and the other side is light. This, to me, is really symbolic for me of how I see this space as a place where slaves were permitted to gather, celebrate, and sell their wares. They used this space to sell wares that they could, so they could purchase their freedom. They were at least given that opportunity to be able to purchase their freedom. But for me, it was, I'm looking at this place as a space where they were allowed to gather. And in this space, they celebrated their history, their originality. They celebrated their spirit. It's hard for me to even comprehend this, the idea of being in a place where you are not free. You're not able to speak your mind and have your free will as a human being, let alone be considered a human being. And who can say all the things that were in the minds of the people that were here when they were allowed to celebrate? But they did celebrate, and so much came out of it. So when I see the flag here today, I'm looking at a space where there doesn't seem to be any of these concerns or any of these constraints in the sense that people can walk through here and listen to music freely, eat freely, sit and be together, all races, all types, young and old. And to think that that is the way that this place is now.
I read in the biography of you and your work that this is not political. So the flags are not a political statement. Talk about that.
Yeah. Now, there are so many different things that have been written about my work. I am a painter, and I believe in aesthetic and beauty and the way in which that art can speak to the achievements of humanity in all its potential and greatness. But everything is political, as is everything is cultural, as is everything is social. And so for me, this flag is all those things. It's something that exists in the fabric of the space that we're in now. You know, we're sitting on this bench. Who pays for the bench? Who gives us the bench, and how does it get paid for? So this is the kind of complexity I'm looking at when I'm making work and making things in the world. Yeah.
What was your history with New Orleans before?
Always just a sense of knowing that it is an African city in America, it was a West Indian city in America, that it was a French city in America, that there was this gathering of cultures that existed here, and in contest at times and together at times, tumultuous gumbo of culture and life. So for me, it was always kind of a fascinating city. I understood it was one of the richest cities in the country at one point, a very powerful story in that sense, economically and industrially. You can talk about the kind of poverty that exists in the city as well, and what comes out of that, how it exists, the violence that exists here, and what comes out of that as well. But I think that New Orleans is a great story. You can go anywhere in the world and take the time to learn about the space you're sitting in and really gather a lot of historical, cultural, social power out of just learning about the place you're in. I think New Orleans has something about that in abundance, and it's really actually overwhelming for me to the certain magic that exists that is what you see in Mardi Gras, that's what you see in Second Line, that's what you see in the Zulu and the Rex celebrations and so forth. And it just goes beyond words, really.
Odile Donald Odita. Yeah. Welcome back to New Orleans.
Yes.
Come back to New Orleans, and thank you very much.
I will come back to New Orleans. It's a great place.
That was WWNO's Eileen Fleming. Prospect 4 has more than 70 exhibits throughout New Orleans. It runs through the end of the month. For details on venues, check prospectneworleans.org. You're listening to Inside the Arts on 89.9 WWNO, New Orleans Public Radio. I'm Diane Mack. A Prospect 4 satellite art installation continues to turn heads in the 800 block of Gravier Street. It's the Goddess Project's mural, Wisdom of the Swamp Goddess. And my guest, gallery owner Angela King, played a major role in bringing this work to fruition. Angela, welcome back.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
So who is this goddess being celebrated?
Well, the goddess that you see visibly on the installation is the Venus of Willendorf. The Venus of Willendorf is perhaps the oldest imagery found of a goddess or of art. She's like kind of the beginning of the art, of art being found. And it was a fertility small sculpture found in 24,000 BCE. It was believed to have been carved during the Paleolithic period. It's in current Austria, where Willendorf is. And the original sculptures, which there are quite a few of them because people carried them on their person, they carried them in their hands, sort of like a prayer stone in their pockets or in a little bag or something. And they were a spiritual guide. And it was the Great Mother Earth. She is a voluptuous and well-rounded. She could be pregnant. She's a fertility goddess. She's a beautiful Mother Earth.
Tell us more about the Goddess Project and how this latest multimedia installation came to be.
This one is called The Goddess of the Swamp. I now go into the swamps quite a bit. I have a little camp on the North Shore, and I go on a boat into the swamps. And when you get back in there, there are these enormous cypress and sweet gum trees, and they're huge and just tower over you, and you feel kind of like you're in the presence of wisdom, of the beginning of the earth. You have this sense that nature provides everything. And when you're in the swamp, I feel this anyway. So when Prospect came out with the name of Prospect, which was the lotus in spite of the swamp, I thought of my swamp goddess wisdom trees that I see back in the swamp, and I thought I would like to recreate those in two dimension on the front of the building. So we made an installation, and they are 30 foot tall trees. There are seven of them. The three in the center are all cypress bark that we took from felled cypress trees and then molded them with fiberglass and Loctite and created these enormous trees. They're 5-6 feet wide at the bottom, and they then got raised up onto the front of the building, and they're attached to an armature on the building. Those are the swamp goddesses.
And there are other things that are on the facade. Can you describe it for us?
Yes. On each of the trees, we do have aluminum sculpture cut out. Elena Walker created that Venus of Willendorf, and she is mounted on the front of each of the trees. But then there are cypress boughs and Spanish moss hanging all over the whole project. But we do have the seven phases of the moon, with the full moon at the top and the center, and then a waxing, waning. So there are seven moons flanking in a big arc over the entire project, and each one of them has something that is sort of a lesson that we can learn from trees. So that's the wisdom of the trees is what's on the moons, like to stand tall and be present, be grounded and be flexible. Lots of things that you would learn from a tree, if a tree could tell you, to remember your place among all living beings on earth. And so we have messages from the seven moons that are really from the trees. And then there are also symbols on the wall. And most of the symbols are from Celtic. They're ancient symbols, but almost all of them, as I look at them, they all are in a trinity of sorts. So a lot of these symbols are very old. There's a three moons, which is a waxing, full, and waning moon. When you study old religions, they represent the maiden, the mother, and the crone, or they represent the earth, the sky, and the sea, or they represent birth, life, and death. That trinity, and there's many symbols that talk to that, and that's been brought all the way to Christianity, to the Blessed Trinity. So it's been used for thousands and thousands of years. This is a 24,000-year-old sculpture of the Venus of Willendorf. So all of these symbols are from ancient religions.
This is not your first time with this project.
No. Actually, the first one we did for Prospect 3, and that was in 2014, that project had about eight artists that participated in it. This project this year is four artists, but that one, we created a wall with about 30 goddess images. They were big cutout aluminum faces. At the top were heavenly goddesses like Yamaya and La Serena and Kali and Mary. We had them at the top, all the heavenly goddesses. And then we had earthly goddesses in the center like Maya Angelou and Frida Kahlo and Gloria Steinem and Amelia Earhart and Oprah Winfrey. And then at the bottom, we had archetypal goddesses like Justice and Liberty and Rosie the Riveter and Wonder Woman. So we had this whole strata of goddesses on the front of the project.
And what made you want to continue revisiting the goddess?
I make altars in my life all the time. I put altars just about every surface where I sit or I look or I live. It's been happening my whole life. I just end up making little spaces that are sacred spaces. And when I learned that I could apply at a satellite exhibit for Prospect 3, I just thought, I want to take this to a bigger place. I know so many really talented goddesses who are artists who helped with it. And so that's how it started.
And who are the goddesses of the Goddess Project?
Myself and Elena Reeves Walker. She is here in New Orleans. Elizabeth Conway, who is a writer, and she wrote the song to the siren, which is printed out and on the front of the project. Elizabeth Conway's in California. And Seuss Corres is a musician, and she composed and made the music with all the sounds of the swamp, with crickets and frogs and birds, and she played drums behind it, and then Elizabeth Conway read her song to the siren on the top of it. So there's an audio component to the installation. And then another local woman by the name of Nancy Gonzalez, she helped with the fabrication of the whole thing. So we were kind of the center of this one.
How long did it take?
Well, Gathering the bark for the trees took the longest because that was a real big project in the woods. But altogether, after the tree bark was found, we fabricated the whole thing in about 20 days. We worked nonstop and we put the whole thing up. We rented a big machine lift to hoist the thing up onto the front of the building. It was a 24/7 installation.
How are you hoping to connect with passerbys who view your work?
It's very easy because everyone wants to know what it is and what it means and where it came from. It's a beautiful opportunity to engage in really positive talk with people, and that's what ends up happening. That's one of the things that I loved about the first project. We had quotes of many, many women on the whole front of it. There were about 45 quotes on the steps to the Temple of the Goddess Project, and people stood and read those quotes and texted them to their children across the country. They were just moved by it. It was a very moving and impactful installation. And this one with the words that are on the moons, that is happening the same way. And people ask a question and we engage. It's a really nice way to connect, and it's bridging some gaps.
What are some of those words on the moons?
So the words on the moons are, reflect the light of a greater source, affirm life's magic, be graceful, stay rooted while reaching for the sky, grow strong without notice, be still to hear your leaves rustle, move with the wind, stand tall and proud, be grounded, be flexible, be cool, stand in the rain, embrace change, think long term. Remember your place among all living beings on Earth.
That's beautiful. A lot to contemplate.
Yes, indeed.
Gallery owner and Goddess Project member, Angela King. Thanks for stopping by.
Thank you. I'm so honored to be here.
Siren's song to the swamp goddess. All the remains of Gaia's wet wilds.
The multimedia mural, Wisdom of the Swamp Goddess, is on view on the facade of 826 Gravier Street through April. That's our show for this week. Support for Inside the Arts comes from the Hellas Foundation. Our program is a production of WWNO and is archived at WWNO.org. I'll be back with more ideas for your artistic palette Tuesdays at 1 p.m., Wednesdays at 8:30 p.m., and a shortened edition on Thursday mornings at 8:45 when we'll go inside the arts. I'm Diane Mack.